We're talking about the rise of remote work. Companies across the Bay Area, they're downsizing. We're going to give you an inside look how companies are actually reimagining its office space for a new hybrid world.
We've got an open collaboration space right off of these elevator vestibules.
It's a tech transformation out of the city and into the suburbs. Zynga shows us how they designed an office space to reflect the new reality of remote work.
We feel like it helps people do their best work, and it works really well from a business perspective.
A new picture emerges of the terror inside an Oakland school building when gunmen opened fire.
It seems like they breached the front of the school and then immediately begin the fire.
And hear from the people working on the ground to stop it from happening again.
A lot of times, the school stuff spills into the streets.
They're ready at a moment's notice for a rescue on the bay.
See, kind of a jack of all trades unit.
How these two members of the U.S. Coast Guard found their calling.
It was probably the first time I saved two lives. I realized I made the right decision.
Sine, cosine, and tangent.
And how this Antioch math teacher is getting national attention for his very unique classroom style.
This is CBS News Bay Area with Juliette Goodrich.
Hello. Well, you could call it the remote work revolution. It has changed how many of us do our jobs since the pandemic. And some of the biggest Bay Area companies are actually rethinking their entire game plan. Now, it had a huge impact on downtown San Francisco. More than 22% of office space sat empty in the city this summer. That number is expected to soar even higher in the next couple of years. Now, some companies are leaving San Francisco for good, including Zynga. It is a video game maker. It moved down to the peninsula to the Bay Meadows neighborhood of San Mateo. Our Max Darrow got an inside look at what could be a model for a new hybrid future.
So right now, we are right over here in San Mateo, our new headquarters, and then all these folks are our remote employees.
Ken Stewart says hybrid work is the present and future at Zynga. He's the VP of Real Estate and Workplace Experience. The game developing company just relocated its headquarters from San Francisco to a much smaller space in San Mateo, specifically designed for a hybrid work model.
During COVID, as hard as it was, we recognize that there were some good components to it.
There are workstations at the office as well as large collaborative spaces, but Stewart says it's now less dedicated to heads down work.
And they all, as individual teams, manage the days that they're in the office, and it's different for all of them.
So naturally, there will be busy days and quiet days at the office. This is one of those days where it's quiet physically at the office, but that doesn't mean the teams aren't working hard at home.
We feel like it helps people do their best work and helps them be happier and healthier and the work-life blend.
He says the company benefits from the new space as well.
It made business sense from the bottom line perspective, where we can reduce our footprint and still have an amazing space that supports this new strategy of working.
Roughly a third of the employers that we're surveying are already making changes to their real estate footprint.
Jeff Belisario is the executive director of the Bay Area Council Economic Institute. They've surveyed hundreds of Bay Area employers throughout the pandemic to get a better sense of their return to office plans.
Between 50 and 60% of companies say they've already hit that new normal.
He says many seem to be embracing hybrid work as more than just a temporary option.
Just the idea of hybrid work, I think companies see the benefits of that in terms of potentially lowering the real estate costs. Employees obviously see the benefits of that.
Now is really where, you know, the rubber meets the road, and we can get people in and learn and grow.
Stewart is eager to dive in to the hybrid future.
People are happier, they're more productive, and they put out better products. At the end of the day, that's how it works.
In San Mateo, Max Darrow, KPIX 5.
Airbnb is another tech giant that's downsizing. It just put another one of its offices in Soma up for sublease. It has now given up four of its five Soma offices, including Zynga's former headquarters. And in the East Bay, Chevron has sold its San Ramon headquarters as it shifts more workers to Texas. SkyDrone 5 actually flew over 82 acres of that complex. Now, the oil giant sold the site to the developer that owns the massive Bishop Ranch property next to it. Chevron is now leasing office space in Bishop Ranch for its new headquarters. And it's not just real estate shakeups. We're talking about Facebook's parent company, Meta, just told its employees it will be freeze hiring and reduce budgets across most of its teams. That could mean layoffs. There have been reports that Meta has told underperforming employees to reapply for a new role within the company for leave. All right, now let's begin the latest on the school shooting in Oakland. Injured six people. We are getting a more detailed picture of how yesterday's violence unfolded. Police revealing that the shooters actually entered the school building and opened fire. It happened just before one yesterday at Rudsdale Newcomer High. It's one of the three schools on the King Estate campus in the Eastmont Hills near 580. And Ann Makovic joins us now with more details and how we're hearing that maybe this shooting is gang related.
Yes. Police say that the shooting was actually targeted, but that none of the six people that were shot was actually the intended target of the shooters yesterday. Luckily, all six people are still alive. We're going to have more on their conditions coming up in just a minute, but the shooters are still on the loose. Police say there were at least two shooters and one accomplice, possibly more. They breached the front entrance of the Rudsdale school on that campus and started shooting immediately when they got inside, and they fired more than 30 rounds before they took off.
We're not sure at this point how they entered, if the door was unlocked or if it was already open. Those are the things that we'll confirm within our investigation, but it does not look like they breached the school or used any tools to breach or enter the school.
Now, three of the victims are still in the hospital this evening. Two are in serious condition, one in stable condition. The other three have been released. They're okay. We know that two were students. One was a counselor, one a security guard, and the other two were school staffers. The campus is going to remain closed for a while as they repair the damages.
There is something about when gun violence violates the sanctity of our children's schools that rocks us to our cores. And it should.
Oakland's mayor there did not mince words. She called this part of an unbridled psychosis of violence nationwide. Also recognizing, though, Oakland's own long and dark history of gun violence, Julia.
Yeah, that really turns my stomach because I didn't realize that they had physically gone inside. We had originally thought they were just from the outside. Regardless of that, you know, we talk about this, it's embedded in the culture kind of mentality, but how do you change that? Is there a solution?
You know, that's the million-dollar question, really, and it's going to be a long process. Beyond gun control measures, community organizers say it's about prevention, understanding why school violence happened. We talked with Youth Alive, that is a group that responded to yesterday's shooting to try to support the people impacted. They say oftentimes school clashes can escalate very quickly.
We have to pay attention to what's happening in with our kids before they go to school. We have to pay attention as a family what was happening with each other in our lives to prevent them from going to school feeling some kind of way.
Now, there's a lot of talk about getting to the root of the culture of violence, unstable families, gangs recruiting kids, but it's obviously going to take a real shift to change the mentality of an entire community.
But hats off to those violence interrupters like Antoine. They are doing it each and every day, and they're not giving up no matter what.
Even though they see the statistics and, you know, the dozens more killed, you know, every month, they're not giving up. And you know, you save one life, that's huge.
Yeah. All right, Ann, thank you. All right, let's bring you some other stories around the Bay. 20 PG&E former executives agreeing to a $177 million settlement over deadly wildfires a few years ago. They were sued by PG&E Fire Victim Trust last year. The suit says PG&E's lack of oversight directly caused the 2017 North Bay fires at the 2018 campfire. Faulty PG&E power lines and electrical equipment sparked those fires. 85 people died in the campfire. It remains California's deadliest and most destructive wildfire. All right, let's take you to SFO now, where a three-day strike by 1,000 airport workers, restaurant workers, finally over. Their union and restaurant employers reached a tentative deal late last night. The two sides were at odds over wages and health care benefits. Workers will vote on the new contract on Sunday. Airport officials say food operations and hours may be limited as worker and delivery schedules return back to normal. And the hardly strictly bluegrass festival at San Francisco's Golden Gate Park is back. In fact, we saw crews setting up, there they are, setting up the stages at the free multi-day festival. It's returning from this two-year hiatus. We know why. The headliners this year include Elvis Costello and Marcus Mumford of Mumford & Sons. It kicks off tomorrow. It goes through Sunday. And did you hear me say it is free? Hurricane Ian, it has regained its Category 1 strength as it heads towards South Carolina. And now we're seeing the scope of damage left behind in Florida. Streets in the southwest part of the state look like rivers. In fact, check out this video right here. It's from Sanibel Island, where a causeway actually split in two. And you can see chunks of it that fell into the sea. Look at that right there. And that's the only access to the island. That's the only way that they can get over there. One of the hardest hit spots is Fort Myers. Drone video actually shows the trail of damage where the boats washed ashore. They were lodged between buildings. There's also debris all over Fort Myers Beach. And people have been trapped in their homes. The water was rising so high that this family had to take shelter in their attic with their six-month-old baby. All right, the Menlo Parks Fire District FEMA Task Force is now on standby in case they're needed to help with the hurricane victims. This team's Urban Search and Rescue Center in East Palo Alto has all the equipment and supplies at the ready.
We could definitely still be sent out there depending on what the conditions are on the ground. Obviously, we have instant support teams that go out first and they kind of set out objectives for the area. And depending on what happens after the hurricane makes landfall in the next 24 to 72 hours, are going to determine what the resources needed are.
You know they're at the ready. They'll do it. All right, let's bring in meteorologist Paul Hagan. And, you know, we actually have Hurricane Ian on satellite right here. So explain this. This is kind of the view from above, right?
This is the view from the International Space Station. So weather satellites are much higher up, way out of the atmosphere in a higher orbit. This is as the International Space Station is flying over the clouds of Hurricane Ian. So all this is occurring in the lowest 10 to 12 miles of the atmosphere. Hurricanes are as shallow as the weather part of the atmosphere, but they're just huge, hundreds of miles across. And this is still a dangerous storm,
even
though it's not as strong as it was when it made landfall in Florida. It's still back to hurricane strength. Let's take a look at what we have on the satellite perspective using the weather satellites and the radar images mixed in there as well. It's a Category 1 hurricane with 75 mile an hour sustained winds. It's as weak as a hurricane can be and still be classified as a hurricane. It's likely to hold on to that strength. Even as the atmosphere is trying to tug it apart a little bit, this is still going to maintain its strength as a Category 1 hurricane as it approaches landfall by early afternoon, Eastern time, late morning, our time, near Charleston, South Carolina. Now, a Category 1 hurricane doesn't bring the type of wind damage that Ian brought to Florida yesterday, but it's still going to produce a storm surge, and it's still going to produce a lot of rain as it moves inland and weakens. It's going to be a huge rainmaker inland for South Carolina and North Carolina, potentially more than 6 inches of rain on a widespread basis. But of course, there's that storm surge threat right along the coast. We can zoom in for a closer look at that. A lot of yellow and orange in the storm surge forecast indicating 5 to 8 foot storm surge on a widespread basis, some spots more than 8 feet tall. So keep that in mind. I'm about 6 feet tall. 2 feet on top of that is the wall of water that's going to be moving inland, especially on the right side of that center of circulation. Around here, our weather, it's a completely different story. It's going to be calm. High pressure building in the upper levels of the atmosphere, which means light offshore winds tomorrow. Not strong enough to significantly boost the fire threat, but warmer temperatures. And that high pressure overhead could trap some urban pollution, but the worst we're going to be seeing over the next several days is our air quality dipping into the moderate category in a few spots. Most of us are going to see good air quality as we head through the weekend into early next week. Looking good towards downtown San Francisco from Treasure Island, upper 60s and low 70s around the bay, down to 77 in San Jose, while other inland spots are still in the low to mid 80s. Temperatures are going to be a couple degrees warmer tomorrow. That's the warmest day we're going to experience for a while. The fog isn't going to be very widespread tonight. Futurecast shows it developing right along the coast and then dissipating rapidly once the sun comes up tomorrow. Should see plenty of sunshine for the rest of the day. Mid to upper 50s to around 60 degrees to start the day on Friday. Those temperatures are going to warm up rapidly inland. So we freeze the maps at lunchtime, a mix of upper 70s and low 80s inland with upper 60s and low 70s around the bay. High temperatures are going to be 3 or 4 degrees above normal around the bay, likely reaching the 70s in both San Francisco and Oakland, but 80s on a widespread basis farther inland, and some of the hotter spots inland in the East Bay likely to reach or even exceed 90 degrees by a couple of degrees. 92 for the hot spots from Fairfield to Antioch to Brentwood, which is hot for late September, but it's not a return to the crazy heat that we had at the beginning of the month. So we can be thankful for that, and your furry friends can be thankful for that as well, including Dazzle from San Jose. She is a rescue dog who obviously enjoys her treats very greatly. A little bit too warm for a walk during the afternoon with temperatures reaching up into the mid-80s in San Jose tomorrow, but plenty of time in the morning or after you get home in the evening to get your pets out for a walk. And temperatures are going to return to near average levels as we head into the weekend. Temperatures will top out in the 60s and 70s around the Bay, upper 70s and low 80s farther inland, right around 80 degrees in San Jose through the first couple days of next week. But more of a warm-up in store by Wednesday and Thursday, returning to the middle portion of the 80s in the Santa Clara Valley and the North Bay. While inland in the East Bay, while your temperatures do back down from the low 90s tomorrow, they're going to return to the low 90s by late next week. So the month of October, not likely to bring us much in the way of relief from the above-average temperatures that we've been experiencing recently.
Think about that one teacher, that one school teacher who made a lasting impression on you. You could say an Antioch math teacher is doing just that for his students. He's getting national attention for his unique methods in the classroom. Remember this?
Pay attention so you can hear them. Sine, cosine, and tangent with Pythagorean's theorem.
Catchy, isn't it? That's Jordan Orozco, Mr. Orozco, a teacher at Deer Valley High School. He uses rap, that's pie. He uses rap to help his students remember math concepts. And he just got some huge props on the Drew Barrymore show from Drew herself and her guest rapper, Fat Joe.
He is getting rave reviews from his students who say the rhymes make it easier for them to remember concepts that used to trip them up. I mean, Joe, thoughts?
Man, let me tell you, I love that guy, man. And he understands his students. And he's getting to them, and he's showing them math in a fun and cool way. So salute to the teacher. And he said,
love it. This is Mr. Roscoe's fifth year of teaching. He's also a graduate of Deer Valley High School. We were texting this afternoon. I said, you better watch, because we're going to give you a shout out, Mr. Roscoe. And he told me, there's no homework for my students tonight. That's a fact. All right, CBS Evening News with Nora O'Donnell is next.